You are listening to Insight here on Capital Public Radio. I'm Randall White. As we continue to look at the budget and legislation, we'll now turn to housing. Assemblymember David Chu, a Democrat from San Francisco, authored one of the bills that could impact the state's 17 million renters. CalMatters housing reporter and data reporter too, right? Your title?
Yep.
I think it says housing and data dude on the website.
That's accurate.
That's Matt Levin you hear. He wrote about this and more in his recent article about why California's renters don't have more political punch. Matt's here to talk about it. Welcome back to Insight. Always great to have you across the table.
Thanks for having me again, Randall.
So, Matt, there was a flurry of pro-renter legislation at the beginning of the year. What happened to those bills?
So most of them died or were watered down significantly. Mm. So there was a bill that would have tried to expand rent control, or at least allowed cities to expand rent control throughout the state. That didn't even get a committee vote because the author didn't think he could get it out of its first committee. There was a bill to allow tenants to have an easier time of unionizing within a building and prevent landlords from retaliating against that type of organizing. That lost, that couldn't get through the Senate, lost by one vote. There was a bill that would have forced landlords to disclose a just cause for evicting someone from an apartment. That couldn't get out of the state assembly. So the only bill, that's not true. There were a couple of significant pro-tenant bills. The most notable one, I would argue, was the one you just mentioned, mm-hmm. David Chu's bill, this anti-rent gouging bill. That got through, but that also got significantly watered down.
Was there this flurry because voters did not repeal Costa-Hawkins in 2018?
Yes. So just broadening it out a little bit, there are 17 million renters in California. Half of them are housing cost burden, meaning they're spending more than 30% of their income on their rent.
And that's going up each year.
Yeah. This is obviously a big problem for a huge swath of the electorate. Gavin Newsom himself called on lawmakers to send him a tenant protection package in the wake of Prop 10, which is what you referenced, that initiative that, again, would have allowed cities to expand rent control if they wanted to. That lost overwhelmingly last November. In response to that, Newsom said, I want to fix this problem. Send me legislation that will help fix this problem. And yet here we are, and there's not that much to show for what Newsom wanted, at least right now.
Just really briefly, so that people have a sense of what Costa-Hawkins is, it really limits the rent control cities can enact.
Yeah, that's right. So it was a law passed in 1995, a state law passed here in the Capitol, that says cities, you can't put rent control on single family homes. You can't put rent control on units built after 1995. You can't put rent control on condos. It very much limited the number of units that cities could put rent control on.
And that proposition to repeal it lost overwhelmingly.
Yeah, by about 20 points. It was very soundly defeated.
Was that surprising?
So yes and no. It was surprising. So from the perspective of there's a ton of renters in the electorate, potentially in the electorate, rents are at an all-time high in many localities. There's been local rent control initiatives that actually have passed. So you would think something kind of as intuitive as rent control, people might get behind in a progressive state like California. So in that sense, it was surprising how overwhelmingly it was defeated. On the flip side, all the polling, even early on, showed that Californians just weren't very supportive of this measure.
Mm-hmm. All right. So in the beginning, we talked about those 17 million renters in California. Given that number and their ability to vote, I'm not sure whether they do in those numbers, but why don't they have more clout with the lawmakers at the Capitol?
Well, you're actually spot on. They don't vote as much as homeowners. So there's many different reasons. And the tenant groups will often point to the money, the money, the money, which is absolutely true, right? The Landlord Association, realtors, developers, which are often at odds with tenant interests. They have way more money than tenants do. Lawmakers know which organizations are donating to their campaigns or spending money on lobbying efforts. But it goes beyond that. Renters are less likely to vote than homeowners, and lawmakers of are aware of that in their districts, right? So just being a renter, controlling for ethnicity, controlling for income, controlling for education, all the other factors that are correlated with low turnout, being a renter in and of itself means you're about 6% less likely to register to vote. So part of the problem here, if you consider it a problem, is that renters just aren't turning out.
Could it be renters don't stay at the same residence, you know, and so when they move, then they don't update their voter registration kind of thing? Is that controlled to some degree by California's motor voter law? Like, could that help change those numbers?
So I think it could. I think you're exactly right diagnosing part of the problem here, which is structural, right? If you're a renter, you're more likely to move. When you move, you have to re-register to vote all the time, right? And that's a barrier to actually voting. But there's also, when you move a decent amount, you know, talking to some of the political scientists I talked to about this, you're less rooted in your community, right? If you're a homeowner, you're more likely to go to city council meetings. You're fighting for maybe the equity in your house. You have a reason to come out and vote, right? If you're a renter, there might be less of an attachment to your community, and by extension, you might be less likely to vote on issues that affect it.
So then, on the other side of the equation is the lawmakers. Are the lawmakers mostly Democrats here in California?
Yeah.
Yet they hesitate to pass any sort of meaningful rent control.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, it is truly a supermajority in each chamber. I think Choose bill, this anti-rent gouging bill, is a good example, right? They basically could have lost 20 Democratic votes and still gotten it over the Hill. And it was a Herculean struggle to get it through, even with that many Democrats on board, right? Or that many Democrats in the chamber. You know, part of the issue is many of these legislators themselves are landlords.
So overwhelmingly, right?
Not overwhelmingly, but about 30%, I believe, 25%, a quarter. We did a story a few months ago on that, looking through financial disclosure documents, and about over 30 legislators were deriving income from secondary rental units. We could only find one legislator that was what I'm calling a pure renter, so a renter without being a homeowner.
Todd Gloria,
Democrat from San Diego.
Assemblyman.
Yeah. And that perspective, right, you're going to have a different perspective on landlord-tenant issues if you are yourself a landlord.
Right. So that does make it. Okay. We're speaking with CalMatters housing and data reporter, or dude, Matt Levin, about his article, A Rare Tenant Win and a Lingering Question: Why Don't California's Renters Have More Political Punch? Seems that if AB 1482 passes, the state Senate and Governor Newsom signs it, California would be just the second state in the country to provide this type of renter protection?
That's right. So, you know, it is notable legislation in that sense, even if it has been watered down. So Oregon passed a bill that this bill is somewhat modeled after. And I think it's also noteworthy that bill in Oregon passed partly because the Landlord Association in Oregon was like, all right, we're not going to fight this one. One of the key differences between Oregon and California is California had a Prop 10 that the Landlord Association can say, voters don't want this, right? Look, this thing lost by 20 points. Why are you guys doing this in the legislature? It's clear Californians aren't behind this, right? Which at least is a effective rhetorical talking point, right? Oregon didn't have a Prop 10, which might have helped it sail through the legislature and become law. But, you know, to your point, California would be only the second state to enact this type of legislation. It's tough to get tenant legislation across the board in a lot of places in the country.
And whenever we're talking about California, of course, it's the largest. And so that really has an effect as well. One of the reasons why rent is so high for so many people is because there's just a shortage of housing across the board, whether it's single family homes or owner-occupied, or whether you're renting. So What is the legislature doing to fix that problem?
So the most notable piece of legislation that tried to fix that problem, which I'm sure has been talked about before by you and probably on this program, was this bill from Senator Scott Wiener, Democrat from San Francisco, SB 50.
Which was the rebirth of an earlier bill.
Exactly, which would have basically forced cities to allow apartment buildings to be built around public transit. And also in some single family home communities that weren't around public transit, at least originally that was the conception on this bill. That bill was buried in a committee basically without a full public vote to much controversy. Senator Tony Atkins, leader of the Senate, has taken a lot of flack for that. But in terms of major efforts to reach Governor Newsom's 3.5 million unit goal, which I have increasing feeling he's going to hear about more and more and more as we get towards 2025, which is when he wants to reach that goal. That was the bill that probably would have done the most, and that was shelved. There's other significant production legislation currently in the Capitol. There's a bill from Senator Nancy Skinner, Democrat from Berkeley, that would basically prevent cities from doing a lot of things that makes it difficult to build. That's an important one. We'll see if...
And she's one of the co-authors of SB 50, right?
Exactly. This is a separate bill that is currently... that got through the Senate, currently in the Assembly. We'll see if that ultimately becomes law. But the big ticket one was Wiener's bill, SB 50, and that has been postponed until next year.
Yep. Right. Even though polling shows that the vast majority of voters would approve of SB 50.
Yeah. So a Public Policy Institute of California poll. So it was interesting. The sponsors of the bill first put out their own poll and said, look, all these Californians support it. And then obviously the reaction from reporters is, you guys paid for this. We're not taking this seriously.
Right. Yeah.
But then the Public Policy Institute of California poll came out and showed pretty much the same thing, that more than a majority of Californians would support the basic tenets of what Senator Wiener's bill was trying to do. I think what's interesting, though, is when you ask people in the abstract, right, do you support more housing around transit? Who is going to oppose that question? When you say you're going to build that housing right next door to you, I think that's a very, very different calculation for people on the individual level. I'm not negating the importance of that polling. I think it was illuminating and shows that there is more support for Wiener's idea than a lot of people thought. But I think it's different when it's an abstract idea you're getting a call about from a pollster, as opposed to they're going to build this four-story building
and
down the road on your block.
Override city zoning in some cases.
Exactly.
When they hear that then maybe they're not as big a fans.
Exactly.
So, was there an effort to strike a deal between construction unions and developers?
Yes. This was first reported by my colleague and podcast co-host Liam Dillon of the LA Times
right.
in January.
Great reporter.
Yep. And the importance of this is two of the biggest power players in the Capitol, developers and then the construction unions that actually build their projects, are at each other's throats on a lot of issues. If you got them to kind of negotiate an agreement on wage levels and how to make things easier to get, how to make projects easier to get through local government to actually be built, that could unleash potentially a bunch of housing activity through the state, right? Newsom said that his staff was involved in these discussions. We talked with the head of the developers a couple weeks ago, and he said they've stalled. These negotiations aren't really going anywhere as of now. That could change, but, you know, it's been 6 months now, so I don't know if many people are still holding out hope of an agreement actually happening.
They're just too far apart
yep.
at this point. CalMatters data and housing reporter Matt Levin will have a link to his article, A Rare Tenant Win and a Lingering Question, Why Don't California's Renters Have More Political Punch? At capradio.org/insight. Matt, as always, thanks for being on the show and for your housing reporting. It's good stuff. CalMatters. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.